Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. As we always do, we're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the Executive Director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, some time back, you wrote a Sermon Coach e-newsletter preaching tip about pastors seeking feedback from their people as to how they were doing. I believe the college from which you graduated had a new president, and this was something he was doing. Do you remember that piece?
Yeah, in fact, you kind of tipped me off, Dean, so I looked up the letter and I brought it with me. Philip Ryken is the new president at Wheaton College. And I graduated a long time ago, 1958, so that's a long time back, and received a letter from him. It was addressed to me and to my wife, dear David and Karen. And I'm not going to read it all, but I'll read just a couple of paragraphs that are germane to what we're talking about. Since taking the helm at Wheaton, I've been doing a lot of listening to students, faculty, staff, and alumni. I believe it's time to extend this listening exercise to alumni in a more intentional and creative way. In January, we launched a program called Discovery Initiative, and we asked 11 current Wheaton College students to schedule conversations with alumni. We want to know several things, such as, how do you view your Wheaton experience, and so on. I won't read them all. Please know that this truly is a listening exercise. Our students will not ask for your financial support. That was comforting to know. So he says, then he names a student, is a Wheaton College student from Three Lakes, Wisconsin, who will be contacting you to schedule a 40 to 45 minute face-to-face conversation at your convenience. Because Wheaton experiences can be so different, we've asked our students to talk with alumni individually. And I ask you both, David and Karen, to consider meeting with her when she contacts you, and confident you will have a delightful visit, and so on. But that was a very fascinating letter to me, and I thought especially the line in there, we're not going to ask you for financial support, that kind of set me at ease a little bit, because you're so used to getting requests for finances from creative approaches. And I thought, oh, boy, I know what she's going to be after. But she wasn't. And we met with her at a Starbucks. I don't remember whether she paid for the coffee or I did. I think I did, as I think about it. But she talked to us for about 45 minutes. And when it was over, I thought that was a good experience. And I said a lot of positive things. And I also said some, I wouldn't say negative, but I would say, you know, since I've been out of Wheaton, because I've gone into a field that Wheaton doesn't teach that much about, I'm kind of ambiguous regarding a lot of my relationship to Wheaton, because I've just been on a different path. And she kept asking questions, and it was a good experience. So I thought that's really good, and it gave me a great admiration for the new president. I've never met him. I have no idea what they did with our comments. You know, I didn't talk about throwing bombs or anything like that. So there was nothing shocking about what I said. But I assume, because they didn't talk to that many people, that there was some kind of a reporting back that went on. And I thought, that's really good. Here comes a new president in, and he's trying to hear as much as he can from other people, so he's not just talking, he's actually listening. And that was positive to me. And I thought, again, that's not usually the way it is with new pastors when they come in. They don't do as much listening as they kind of, I know what agenda I'm coming with. And I like that listening process very much.
Now, how does this experience connect with your thoughts regarding churches?
Well, I've almost already said it, but I don't think that many times I hear ministers saying, I need to know what you're thinking as a congregation. I think it's very important, and I think that the church could say, we've assigned our deacons or our elders or whatever officers you have to meet with our people, and we would just like to ask you questions as to how things are going in terms of the church. Could the church be more helpful to you if we understood some of your needs, whatever? What experiences have been very positive? What haven't been all that positive? You know, there was a whole book I remember reading, Dean, about exit interviews. It was people going through churches there a couple of years, then they're gone, but nobody interviewed them as to why they're leaving all these places. And so this was a whole book telling what the most common answers were as to why people stopped attending a church and went looking for another church, or most of the time didn't look for another church. They just exited, and then it was all over. They just stopped looking. And that's a huge part of where our country is. People have stopped attending church. Now, why is that? Somebody ought to be able to figure that out. This exit interview book was giving answers to that were very helpful. I presume that ministers could initiate programs that would get feedback that would be helpful to them, but for some reason they've not been taught how to do that, or they resist doing that. I don't know what, but it's not going on, to my knowledge anyway.
Well, that's fascinating to me. There's an old saying that one should let sleeping dogs lie. Might ministers be waking up thoughts in people they would be better off not thinking about?
I don't believe so. You say, would the president of Wheaton be better off not knowing what people are thinking? I think he's better off knowing what people are thinking. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to deal with problems if you are aware of what the problems are. I know, Dean, every time we did what we called a 50-day spiritual adventure, which involved literally thousands of churches, I would have an evaluation sheet in there. You tell us what was good and what wasn't good, and then we will make sure we make adjustments for the following years. And that was extremely beneficial. There were a lot of times that the criticisms were even directed at me personally. I remember reading one sheet that said, the sermon samples from other ministers were much better than your sermon samples. And I thought, okay, you got poor taste, but that's your problem. You know? But then the next year, I really worked to make sure that my sermons were the very best I could do. And so it was helpful to know that one person anyway didn't think that those are very good. You take everything in stride. But also, you know, I found that when I was in radio, you had a huge feedback arrangement. If you hit a topic that was a hot button, the mail would come in from everywhere. Whereas if you hit that hot button in church, you didn't get that same kind of response because people don't write letters to you. So you were at a disadvantage. So you had to create ways to do that. I would, at the end of series, I would have a card in the bulletin saying, tell me what was most helpful, what was least helpful about the series, what suggestions would you make, or any random comments you want to make, do it on the back of the card. And those were incredibly beneficial. And the truth is, now this is not what happened, but the truth is, if I didn't even read a one of them, I still made the congregation feel better that I had asked them for feedback. Now, I did read them all. In fact, I was quite sensitive as I wrote, because I realized I wasn't the king of the world all the time. And there were things that I said that were confusing, people didn't understand, and so you work on it even more. There's a certain protectiveness about the pulpit. Once you get behind the pulpit, it's like you and God are standing here together, you know, and look out because we're going to deliver it. I find that as I've worked with pastors, and I work with pastors a lot, that they are reluctant to ask for feedback. It's almost like we got enough problems without that. You know, let them keep their opinions to themselves. I like the shield up here in front of me. I'm not that way. I feel like it's extremely helpful to know what people are thinking.
Let me ask a more practical question, David. What's the process you would initiate to get this kind of information?
Well, I very seldom think that feedback comes uninvited. If I hear someone preach and I think I could be helpful to that person, I still don't go up to the person and say, you know what, I got a few ideas, could you have breakfast sometime? That puts me at a decided disadvantage. If somebody preaches and says, I noticed that you were there, what did you think of my sermon? And I say, you know what, I didn't listen to it that way, but I am happy to do that. I come listening as to what God has in mind for me. But if you would like for me to evaluate the next time you preach, I'd be more than happy to do that just from my own experience, if you'd find that helpful. But I'm not ready to just tell somebody everything I think without them asking for that help. I find that when I tell people what I think without them asking, they usually didn't want it. So there's a certain sense in which there's a protocol that's needs to be followed that they requested. A pastor is in that situation where if you want to know what people are thinking, you have to give them a safe way to allow them to do that. I have suggested a lot of different things, and I've done these things as well. I would say to the congregation, just so you're aware, I have three people I've asked to evaluate my sermon as to how helpful it is today. And when it's over, they will write out written critiques of what I have done. And if you would like to be one of those persons in the future, just let me know and I'd be more than happy to put you in that situation because I need help. I'm not the greatest preacher in the world. Now, saying that, you know, I don't think I'm the worst preacher in the world either. But it's basically saying I'm not in a position where you can't get at me. I'm trying to be vulnerable to you. And I value what you do. Even by saying that, and nobody knows exactly what those three people have said about what I preach, it puts me in a position where I'm in a whole different relationship with my congregation than in a place that most people feel he's not going to listen to me no matter what I say. You know, that's just the nature of the game. You're the expert. I don't know what is good or what isn't good, so why should I care? It just puts everything on a different playing field that says, I need your input. Part of it is because I'm not always sure as a minister how to relate to your world. So help me relate better. And I like that arrangement. I feel very comfortable with it. I wish everybody could be on radio for a period of a year. It's a very humiliating experience to put your heart into a sermon, then nobody responds. You know, you think, I must have said something. Maybe the power went out that day. No, it didn't. It's just that you didn't hit some topic where people were really responsive to you. I remember my wife did a series on childhood sexual abuse. She told me she was going to do it, and I thought, sure, Karen, you can do it. Go ahead. You know, who knows anything about that? And she talked about child sexual abuse for probably a whole week on the Chapel of the Air broadcast, and the mail came in from everywhere. I mean, she was even overwhelmed. But all of a sudden, we knew that this was a huge issue. And the truth is, we wouldn't have known except by the feedback, you know. And then that resulted in her not only doing more broadcast on it, but she did a whole book. And the book is still in print. I mean, because it is a massive problem in today's world. But the feedback made us aware of what was going on. So I think it's important, and I would solicit it in every way. But at the same time, I'm talking about it now because I find that ministers tend to say, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Or that's a dumb thing. Your phrase, let sleeping dogs lie, you know. I'm insecure as it is. Why even get people thinking about what might be done better? So I'm basically at this point in time, yeah, think about it. It's a good thing, and your people are your friends, and you will find that it's very beneficial, and you will find that, for the most part, people are very reluctant to criticize when they're asked to do it. But if you don't ask them to do it, they're not reluctant to criticize then. They will talk to friends. They will express themselves.
Sure.
So I'd just as soon to get it up in front of everybody and say, okay, let's be open. How am I doing?
The reality is the feedback is an important element of self-improvement. It's an important element to make sure you're hitting the target. And feedback is not going to come from people unless you ask them to give you feedback.
That's the very important point. If you don't say, I need to initiate it, it's not going to happen. It'll happen probably, but it won't happen to you. You'll get it third hand, and then it's worse than if you get it first hand. Constructive feedback isn't usually something that comes unsolicited. It needs to be requested.
If you want constructive feedback, you have to solicit it.
Yes.
Very good. Well, we thank you for joining us for our podcast today. Of course, you found our podcast through our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And we invite you to spend some time browsing through those resources. We also invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.